AMP Radio.
Welcome to another edition of AMP Radio, brought to you by Lavassi International. Lavassi International is bringing masculine designs to your bathroom. Lavassi is the exclusive retailer of handcrafted ceramic sink, combining a handmade manufacturing process with an industrial finish. If you're looking for something different, check out their tribal design, spike design, or puzzle design, just to name a few. Lavassi International, lavassi.co.uk. Let me spell that for you. LOVASI.co.uk. Now shipping to the United States of America and Canada. Use the code word FANGOS to receive 25% off any purchase. Now back to the show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainer.
Yes, indeed. We are in tonight's entertainment, and welcome to another edition of AMP Radio, brought to you by the AMP Radio Network. This particular show, we'd like to call this hashtag, This Week in MMA. I'm your host, Proteus. Follow me on Twitter, at Proados. And of course, tonight I am not joined by the boss man himself, as you can hear, because usually Tony is the host of these shows. I am joined tonight by the one and only, the voice of insanity, the life of the party herself, and one half of the Pam and Sam team that went to Vegas for 219. If you have not seen Pam's Instagram or her Twitter, please check it out. Let's bring her in right now. Pam from North Carolina.
I was wondering where my music was. Hey, how's it going? So
it's
tonight,
going good,
I am
Pam.
Tony. I am DJ Tony tonight with cool hair. How about that?
Oh, well, definitely with cool hair. And just so we all know, there is a little bit of a lag tonight, it seems, on my end of things. I was trying to get the two computers set up going on, but Tony will edit all this out. Anyways, we are here tonight to recap this. Of course, we're doing This Week in MMA. We're recapping Stevens versus Choi, also known as hashtag UFC STL. That's right. It came to us from St. Louis, granddaddy of them all, but we won't get into that. We got into that on Wednesday's show, MacMan Picks Up show. Pam, I wanted to go ahead and get straight into this, and I wanted to talk to you quickly before we got into the fights. We saw a new commentary team on this particular show, and it was Brendan Fitzgerald and Paul Felder. So I wanted to get your comments. What did you think about the commentary team, the brand new commentary team of Brendan Fitzgerald and Paul Felder?
Okay, well, you know what? To be quite honest, it's not that I was not paying attention to the commentary, but I was so engrossed in the fight that like the commentary I thought was on point. I loved it. And I think it was so on point that people weren't like, oh, who is this person? What are they talking about? I mean, it was butter. It was so smooth. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I thought they did a really outstanding job. And Paul Felder get points for his hot ginger.
Indeed. His suit was tight. And that watch he was wearing was also spectacular. I thought this was a good opportunity for the UFC to show off, Paul Felder. I wasn't too sure about Brendan Fitzgerald. He kind of seemed to me more of a Goldberg-like kind of a commentary guy who was kind of waiting for the word from the booth or from the truck out back to tell him what to say and to tell him what the stats were. And then, of course, Paul Felder was playing a good Joe Rogan and just kind of, blurting out whatever
he's getting better and better. Yeah, no, he's getting better and better.
Yeah, the last time that Tony and I rated Paul Felder, we didn't rate him very high, but I thought this time Paul Felder was on point. Even his in-cage interviews were very good. You have something to say on that, Pam?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it was only, he had only done it, was that his first time that he had done it, maybe second time? So, it's just like us. It's
second or third,
live and learn. Learn by your mistakes and whatever he's doing, he's doing it well. So I think he did an amazing job, and kudos to him.
Absolutely. I think that Paul Felder, like I just said, mentioned, is improving. And we'll have to see if Brendan Fitzgerald can improve from what we saw. He seemed like he was an educated person on the sport, and but just seemed a little bit robotic, like I said, kind of like a Goldberg kind of style. So let me just run through here the undercard, and then of course we're going to break down the main card that was. Mads Brunel wins over Mike Santiago by decision. JJ Aldridge is also a winner over Danielle Taylor by decision. I believe both of those were split decision, the two women's fights were split divisions, the decision. So
yeah, that was
Taylor
good fight.
Aldridge versus the Kalindra Ferraria and Jessica Ai also
Faria.
Came down to a decision. Sorry, thank you very much. Your countryman, I believe. Yes. So you would know the pronunciation better than I would. Of course, we had Kyung Ho Kang versus Guido Cantelli. Of course, Kang, the winner by submission. We moved on.
That was a good fight.
Was it a good fight? Yeah. I didn't get to
that
see
was
end of
a
the
good
undercard fight.
Fight,
unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if anybody's listening, go back and watch that one. Talidia Bernardo versus Irene Aldana. Of course, Aldana with the winner by decision on that one.
Mm-hmm.
We had Matt Frivola versus Marco Polo Reyes. Of course, this is the performance of the night winner.
That was a kick-ass fight.
TKO.
That was awesome.
Yeah, hey, and of course, getting him the performance of the night, Marco Polo Reyes, your boy.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably run Pony in there. Tony, insert that. Of course, and the last fight on the undercard was James Krause versus Alex White. And of course, Krause gets that one by decision. Anything to say on that one, Pam?
I thought it was a close fight. I thought maybe that White had won that fight, but it was a decision. And you know what they say, don't leave it up to the judges. But that was a pretty good fight. Action packed all three rounds. It was a good fight. And Krause's hair on point.
Oh, fantastic.
He has nice hair. Haircut.
Let me try. Does he have a nice haircut?
He does have a nice haircut. That side part, that side cut. He looks good. But you know what? Can I say something? Those Reebok uniforms, outfits, whatever you want to call them, they look like the cleanest pair of dirty shorts. They are just awful, 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 awful. And I wish they, you know, as much money as Reebok makes, you would think that they would outfit these fighters with some, you know, something with class and style. But this stuff is ugly. It looks like you pulled it out of the dirty clothes, for heaven's sake. Am I lying?
Yeah, you'd think that after this amount of time with the UFC that we'd see something a little bit different. I think that most people agree that they think that Reebok is kind of stolen from the roots of fight with their particular design, and that's just not cool. I mean, with everything that has been, you know, with the Reebok deal has seemed to kind of nosedive and crash and burn. I mean, just from the launch when they spelt, you know, Gilbert's name wrong and all kinds of other spelling mistakes to, you know, the wardrobe malfunctions we've been having. And then this is, I mean,
right?
Are you paying $90 for one of these Reebok kits?
No. I'll go to Represent and buy my Nate Diaz shirt from there. But let me tell you something about Roots of Fight real quick before I lose my train of thought. Jessica Rose Clark fought, and she was talking about how, and I don't know if you know that her house had been broken into, and they took everything.
Yeah.
They took all her training gear. I mean, they killed her cat and everything. And she had to put a note on Twitter about, hey, Reebok, you know, throwing off your bone. And who am I just saying? The clothing company we were just talking about, I've had like a BTS, a brain turned to shit attack.
Roots of Fight.
Yes, they messaged her and they said that they were going to send her all kinds of new training gear. He said, since Reebok tries to copy it, we'll send you the original stuff. And so they're going to take
care
of her. I thought that was really awesome. I thought that was great for them to step up.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like we may be seeing some winds of change coming in the UFC, but you never know, because the management is and the promoter are very hard, you know, hard line, and they want to stick to what they've been doing for the past, you know, 25 years. But Pam, I digress, because we want to keep this show under an hour, and we've got a lot to break down, and we've got some other topics that we want to get to. So let's start the curtain jerker here, Pam. We move up to the men's 145 division. We go Darren Elkins versus Michael Johnson. Now, of course, Elkins wins this by second round submission, of course, getting the performance of the night on this particular fight. Pam, we had mentioned on Wednesday's show, Smack My Picks Up edition of Amp Radio, at least I did, that I thought that this was not a good move for Michael Johnson to move down to 145. But what did you see in this fight, Pam?
Well, I was remember, do you remember when we said before I had moved up to the main card, that was my spotlight fight? Because remember, I had said I was curious how he was going to do with his weight cut. And then, you know, a couple of days before the weigh-in, he was talking about how he was having, you know, a hard time cutting weight and things like that. And when he got out there, I mean, he looked, keep in mind, what is Michael Johnson? 5'10", 5'10", 5'11". I mean, he looked just ghostly. He was just skin and bones, and he started off okay. I mean, he started off well. I would say that he won the first round, and he was winning the second, and Elkins just came out of nowhere. Like he always says, I mean, he surprises you, and I think people sleep on Elkins. Hey, shout out Team Alpha Male. But,
Team Alpha Male,
you know, where does Michael Johnson go from here? You know, does he go back up to 155? Because who tried that? A couple of the guys have tried it. Pettis tried it.
Yeah.
Dos Anjos tried it, went down, and then went back up, and he's doing better. He's doing amazing at, what is he, 170 now? Amazing. So I don't know what happens to Michael Johnson. I mean, the speed is there, but he just seems to be getting, because he, you know, when he fought Gaethje, I mean, it was a great fight, and then Gaethje just caught him and was just relentless. So, you know, I don't know. Where does he go from here? Is that what, two losses in a row now?
Yeah, I agree with you. Where does he go from here? Okay, I think that it was a tough cut for him to get to 145. I was surprised, honestly, Pam, as you know, that he made it to 145. As you said, he did look sucked out on the scale. And but I thought when
three
he rehydrated that he looked three losses in a row. Yeah, but I mean, again, I don't know if we want to write him off just yet. And I don't know how much of a leg there is between you and I, Pam, but it seems like there is a little bit. Like I was saying, he looked gaunt on the scale, but looked like he rehydrated well. And of course, as you were mentioning, he started off well. The first round, at least half of the first round, Pam would have given he was very quick. And that's the thing with Michael Johnson, that he always looks very quick at the beginning of fights. And if you can outlast him, maybe or perhaps you can get him in the later rounds. And I honestly, Pam, I think if it was anybody else but the damage, you know, in quotations, I think Johnson probably wins this one in the first, because as you said, his boxing was on point, you know, hitting with some big shots, and Elkins was just, you know, managing to absorb those shots and kind of, you could see Elkins' mind working while he was in the cage, just kind of taking in what Michael Johnson was doing, studying, taking those big shots. And eventually, in the second round, Pam, that takedown came. And I just was impressed with the ground and pound that he was able to pull off on Michael Johnson, get him into the crucifix position. And then as soon as he was in the crucifix position, Michael decided he was going to explode and try and get out of there. And Elkins just took his back. And, you know, it, just like that, that rear naked choke was in. Wow, it was a fast tap by Michael Johnson. It was in deep. And that's not, let's not take anything away from Elkins. I mean, this is six wins in a row for Elkins, Pam.
Yep, six wins in a row. His last spot, six wins in a row. And, you know, so good for him. Good. I mean, that's awesome for him. And I think that ugly tattoo gives him magical powers or something.
I was thinking the same thing when I was watching the fights. And
it's good mojo for him or something.
It must be, because
it either gives him magical powers. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's either magical or it distracts the other person. And just, you know, I don't know, but good for him, you know, good for him.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Over Johnson, and all of them have been, let me see, his last wins all by decision except for Michael Johnson was a submission. So good for him.
Yeah, I think the tattoo is one of those things that is very distracting, as you had mentioned, and it is one of the worst tattoos I've ever seen.
Right. But
to be working for him. So like, as I said, congratulations to Elkins. And one thing I thought was strange, at the end of the fight, we saw a picture of Elkins' corner, you know, of course, your boys at Team Alpha Male, and I thought it was kind of funny that Elkins handed his mouthpiece to the cut man, and the cut man then handed it to his corner. I thought that was very strange. I've never seen that before. I mean, maybe that's something that happens on a regular basis, but I just thought that kind of looked funny to me because I had not seen it before. Did you notice that at all, Pam?
I didn't, but I'm wondering if maybe that's one of their maybe little rituals or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. You never know. I just thought it was kind of strange.
But whatever he's doing is working for him.
Yeah, it seems to be working for him, and you know, the Team Alpha Male, the team that they've set up there seems to be working very well. I mean, not a lot of big names, but names that they've built themselves mostly, and it seems to be working for them. So congratulations to them. Congratulations to Elkins, because that's Michael Johnson moving down from, you know, 155, a bigger fighter moving down, and he looked great against it, absorbing that big power and getting that big submission. So let's move on, Pam, to the welterweight division. We go Kamaru Usman versus Emil Mech. I'm trying to say it like they said on the broadcast, because I assume that they're getting it correct. Pam, what did you see here in this fight?
You know what? I was here in Valhalla, and I like Mick. I still call him Mick. I wish this would have been more stand up, and I know that Usman, you know, he is a wrestler. But truth be told, it was kind of boring to watch him, because, you know, Mick, I mean, he just couldn't. I mean, he was hanging in there, but you knew that he wanted a stand-up fight, and Usman wanted none of that. But then the after speech, when he's just talking shit and said, I only gave 30%. I was like, you know what? Shut the fuck up. And then he called out Colby Covington, and that's the fight that I want to see, because both of them are wrestlers, and Colby does have that striking power. So that's the fight that I want to see. It was a good fight, and you could tell that Mike was so disappointed with his loss. I mean, he was disappointed because it's not the way he wanted it to go. But I think he was expecting more stand up and really wasn't prepared for the lay and pray of Usman.
Well, let me bring you back to the Colby Covington fight. Because of course these two, Kamaru Usman and Colby, have a little bit of history. They've gone back and forth on Twitter, and Usman was actually trying to get a fight with Covington when Emil was having his visa troubles that we discussed last week. So yeah, that wouldn't be a bad fight. So let's break it down. Like you said, that it wasn't a very interesting fight, and I would agree. If you wanted to see a stand-up battle, this is not very interesting. I tried to watch this fight again this afternoon, and I just felt like I didn't need to watch it again. Because I knew what had happened. You know, Emil Meek tagged Kamaru Usman early. You know what I mean?
And
Kamaru felt the power of Meek. Yeah, absolutely. He felt the power of Meek, and he didn't, like you said, he didn't want any part of the stand-up. So he did what he does best, and he went to his wrestling game. Unfortunately, Emil Meek does not have the kind of wrestling game at this time. His second fight in the UFC? He doesn't have the wrestling at this time. Yeah, to ward off a guy who has the wrestling talent of Kamaru Usman. And like you said, Meek, I'm going to call him Meek as well, because, you know, it's easier. Meek, I don't know about this Mech. I mean, probably in Norwegian it's Mech, but either way, Mech just didn't seem to have, as you said, he had enough to survive a wrestling game, enough to survive against Usman, and good on him, because he didn't get finished. You know what I mean? He didn't get submitted or anything like that. He never looked like he was in a position where he was compromised. You know what I mean? And if he was compromised, he got out of that situation really quickly. So I think, like you said, Emil Meek will be back, and I think this guy, the sky's the limit for this guy. And Kamaru Usman moves up, and like you said, Usman saying that he only gave 30%. It looked like he had a tough fight to me. I mean, it looked like he had all he could handle against Emil Meek, especially on the feet. If it would have stayed on the feet, I think Meek would have gotten this one.
I agree.
Okay, so let's move up.
I mean, taken to consider, he's still very new to the sport, and it basically is like self-taught. He saw it and wanted to start training, so he actually opened up his own gym so he could start training. So good for him, you know. He'll be back and live and learn.
Yeah, and as we said, this is you know, only his second fight in the UFC, and he's getting a young surging star like Kamaru Usman, and exposing Usman. as well. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Meek exposed Usman and showed that, you know, he's susceptible to, you know, a hard-hitting, really talented boxer. So we'll see what happens moving forward. And if that Colby Covington fight comes up, I mean, there's no chance that Covington is going to be a better boxer than him. Boom, boom. I digress. Let's move on to the women's 125 division. We go, Pam. Paige VanZant versus your girl, Jessica Rose Clark.
That's right.
What did you see here?
You know what? I like this fight. It was a fun fight to watch. I think, you know, I've seen Jessica fight, and she kind of, and you know what? She didn't seem to be, like, all there, like mentally, because normally she's a very aggressive boxer. But I think with everything that had gone on with her during that week, I think that was kind of a little bit playing with her mind. But, I mean, her takedowns, wrestling was great. Wrestling was on point. She had some great striking. I wish she would have done more leg kicks, but, you know, she got the win, so good for her.
Yeah, I think that you're right. And I think one of the things that – go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to say Paige is not – I was going to say Alpha Male, but she's not training with Alpha Male anymore. But she did have Justin Buckles in her corner, so maybe she's half and half.
Well, once you go Alpha Male, you never go back. That's what I hear.
Maybe. I wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know either. Let's move along. Listen, I think that what you're saying is true. I mean, you know, we have to give it all the praise to Paige VanZant. She did break her right arm in the fight. I was trying to rewatch the fight and see when it did actually happen, and I can't.
I think it was that spinning back fist that she did in the first round when
okay,
she clocked her
okay.
in the head.
I mean,
that's when it happened.
Yeah, that's a very astute observation by you. I did not see that, so perhaps it was the spinning back fist. Listen, I thought that Paige was doing a very good job in the first. She somehow got herself into a takedown. She was kind of throwing in the first round. She was kind of throwing the same kind of things, you know, that spinning kick that she has had some success with in the previous fights. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that straight kick as well. And then of course she got wrapped up by Jessica and for the first and second round, that was kind of the tail of the tape. I mean, this is kind of the thing that I was saying to you guys about the 125 division. I think the girls that are coming down from a higher weight are going to have that kind of advantage. And, of course, Paige VanZant was kind of running her mouth, Pam, in the lead up to the fight, saying that if it went to the ground, she would have the advantage and she would be able to dominate Jessie Jess. And that was not the case. I mean, we did have a ref that was kind of you know, BJJ based, so he kind of allowed Jessie Jess to work her ground game up maybe a little bit more than most refs might have done. But I thought it was good, because even though Jessie wasn't, you know, doing that ground and pound game, she was actually moving into kind of getting those submissions and trying to work for a submission and really holding Paige down and kind of trying to suck that energy out of her. Would you agree?
Oh, I agree. And it worked, right?
And then we saw the third round. Paige VanZant with a broken right arm held Jessie Jess at bay. And I thought that was very interesting to see, because in the first round, we kind of saw the Paige throw these kicks and kind of try to keep her distance. But in the third round, we really saw her, you know, I think she took that third round, Pam. I really do. I think she, even though she had a broken arm, she would manage to frustrate Jessie Jess and kind of keep her at bay. And I thought it was very good performance. So if we need to break Paige VanZant's arm every time she starts a fight, like, I mean, maybe we should do that, because she looked really impressive in that third round.
Break both arms? I'm teasing. I don't know.
No,
I just think that if the distractions weren't there for Jessie Jess, I think we would have seen a different fight.
And of course, you know, as you mentioned, the distractions are very real. And I think we'll get into that a little bit later as well, because we'll talk about the weight cutting failures by Hall. So we'll get into that later, you know, to kind of the outside distractions. If you don't have anything more to say on this fight, Pam, let's move on to the main event because we're half an hour in and we've got some more topics to go. So are you ready to move on?
I am ready.
Okay, so let's move on to the main event we go. Jeremy Stephens versus your boy, Doo Ho Choi, the Korean Superboy. Made a mistake, in my opinion, coming out to the Superman music. I mean, that right there is just like the Eminem curse. I think if you come out to the Superman music, you're kind of saying a little bit too much. But Pam, Jeremy Stephens versus, exactly. Jeremy Stephens versus Doo Ho Choi, what did you see here?
I like this fight. It didn't go the way that I wanted. My pick was, of course, I did it and so many other people. Well, no, because Choi was actually the underdog on this, was he not?
I'm not sure what the betting odds were here. Let me just check
them
quickly.
I thought that he was, it was
a
great fight.
At a -170.
Was he really? I thought that it had changed when it got closer to the fight. But I thought it was a great fight. I'm really surprised at Jeremy Stephens. He looked fantastic. And it's okay. Everything that he did was right on point. I mean, and Choi was throwing everything but the kitchen sink at him and couldn't stop him. So it was a good fight. It was a good fight. So now they're talking about he was calling out Brian Ortega. And Brian, you know, he's holding out for a title fight. Come on. So you know who I would say? Give him Elkins. Him and Elkins would be a great fight. Aren't they the same weight class, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be a fun one to watch.
Well, I mean, I would not put it past Jeremy Stephens to have a very, very interesting fight with Brian Ortega either. We'll get into that later because I think that's a point of contention that you wanted to get into later in some news. Everybody calling out T-City. So let me get into this right now. Of course, Jeremy Stephens versus Doo Ho Choi comes out as the fight of the night. Winner, of course, both men received $50,000, I believe it was, on this particular fight card. As you said, Jeremy Stephens, Pam, showed me something I had not seen from Jeremy Stephens in maybe ever. We saw in the first round, Jeremy Stephens was the prototypical Jeremy Stephens. He was throwing those haymakers, trying to, knock somebody's head off. And Doo Ho Choi, as you said, was, throwing everything but the kitchen sink at him. I mean, those flying knees were a thing of beauty. But Jeremy Stephens was able to take those shots and endure. I mean, kind of like Elkins in the fact that he was able to take some damage. But what I saw from Jeremy Stephens...
Ha-ha, no pun intended, right?
Exactly. No pun intended. Absolutely. After the first and second round, I saw that Jeremy was actually, it seemed to me like he had a game plan. He was working that body. He was working Doo Ho Choi's left-hand side, of course, the lead side. Not only the lead leg, but the body as well. He was going to the leg and the body consistently in the first round. Yes, taking damage, but trying to get those hands of Doo Ho Choi to lower, going to the body, going to the leg, and then eventually in the second round, bam, bam, that overhand right landed, and boom, Doo Ho Choi was down on the canvas. And I wanted to applaud the referee that was in this particular fight because he did a great job. He saw that Doo Ho Choi was not there. He saved him from taking too much damage. Yep. And I'm a guy who's going to err on the side of caution here. I thought that I don't need to see Doo Ho Choi go out into the land of the wind of ghosts in order for me to feel that Jeremy Stephens did a good job. But do you agree, Pam?
Oh, I agree. I think, if you think about it, When they announced the winner, Choi was not even there. He was still down. So,
Like you said,
on the air of caution.
And Stephens,
didn't even
of course,
see him
decided
after.
That he was going to go on a victory tour, right? Stephens, after he won, went on
a victory tour,
hugging his parents and his grandmother. And maybe if you were there in the crowd, he would have hugged you as well. But I thought, from Jeremy Stephens. And again, as I said on Wednesday, I think Doo Ho Choi is going to need this 2-year rest. He's going to need this 2-year military tour to recover from these two fights that he's had with Cub Swanson, and Cubby Sampson, and the little heathen, Jeremy Stevens.
But he's still very, what is he, 26? So he's still young. He's still very young. And who was it that came back? The Korean zombie did his tour and came back and did amazing. So, you know, if anything, he'll come back probably maybe bigger and stronger, I think.
Well, he came back, the Korean zombie came back looking strong, but then got injured. So, I mean, if Duho Choi comes back, looks good, and then gets injured, I mean, that's not good to anybody, right?
No, that's true. Only time will tell.
Yeah, so anyways, time will tell. I think, as you said, I don't know if you feed... I think Jeremy Stevens versus Colby Covington would be a more interesting fight right at this moment. That division, honestly, the 145-pound division is very interesting right now. I don't think that
Did you say Colby?
Yeah, Colby Covington.
Colby's not 145.
Oh, no. Oh, God. What am I saying?
Yeah, he was like, what?
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's a conspiracy. Yeah, speaking of weight cutting, Elkins would be fun. I think it would be fun. Or Elliot. Even Elliot would be fun.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I was trying to say. Elkins, not Covington.
Elliot. Who else can we throw in there? Llamas?
Wrestlers on my mind. Mm-hmm. I apologize.
Yeah, Llamas would be a good one.
Well, Llamas just is coming off of a loss, though, right? So we can't pair up a guy who's coming off of a win against a guy who's coming off of a loss. So I don't know. The 145 division is very interesting, and I think that we don't need to see anybody moving around for super fights or anything like that. We need to see what's happening at the top of the division. Right. I mean, we're good. I mean, as soon as we see what happens with Max Holloway and your boy, New Jersey native, Frankie Edgar. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest fights of the year, by the way. I'm so glad we're going to get this fight because I was so disappointed that we did not get it. I'm glad that we're going to get that. So the 145 division is very exciting right now. 135 is exciting right now as well. I don't think we need to see these guys, these champions, move around and fight other people, Pam. I just don't think that we do. I mean,
no.
I digress.
Stay in your lane.
Let's move into – I'm going to stay in my lane. That's right. I'm going to stay in my lane. So let's move into something that I thought was very interesting because we had two fights fall out of this card. Of course, as you mentioned, we had Hall versus Belfort fall out, and we had Elvis versus Cummings fall out. Both kind of weight – cutting related. So let's get into this right now, Pam. What do we think? I mean, we've discussed this to nauseam on this show, but it keeps coming up.
Well, what I'm wondering is Uriah Hall, who was fighting at, what is he fighting at, 170, 185?
185,
right?
In this fight, yeah.
Okay. How much weight are you cutting? I mean, what are you walking around at? And, you know, I'm not trying to be insulting, but I guess for me, I just can't fathom how, you know, you have a fight coming up. You know you need to cut weight. What are you walking around at? What weight are you walking around at that you have to cut so much weight that your body shuts down? I mean, I guess I don't understand the whole weight cutting process evidently, but I would, you know, because I'm not a fighter. I don't claim to be a fighter. I am a fight watcher, but I would, you know, in layman's terms or in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, if I'm fighting at, say I'm 115 right now, if I'm fighting, or say I'm 120 pounds and I'm fighting at 115, I'm not going to balloon up to, you know, 135 or 140 and eat steaks and ribs and go clubbing. And then a month later, hey, man, I got to drop 15 pounds. You know, I would assume that you try to stay within 5 pounds of your natural weight. I don't know. I don't know how that works. But, you know, to cut weight to the extreme that your body shuts down and you're in the hospital for 2 days, I just don't get it.
One thing that I thought was interesting that Dana White said was that Uriah Hall was, you know, out in L.A. partying having a good time. Yeah, but we have to remember that one of his main coaches decided that he was going to commit suicide, maybe more than less than a month ago. So all of these guys that he was very that the Robert Follis touched seemed to be having this issue. I mean, we had it on the previous card on 219. We had a fighter that had been affected by this suicide. We have Uriah Hall, who is being affected by Robert Follis's suicide. Again, I think that we need to take these things into consideration because these guys are human beings. They're not robots.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I mean, we can jab and poke at this guy as much as we want and say, you know, hey, you're a professional fighter. You should be on weight. You should be able to cut weight. And Dana White himself going, you know, that's what the Performance Institute is for. This guy trains in Las Vegas. He fights out of Las Vegas. That's what the Performance Institute is there for. And I agree, Dana White. I agree that the Performance Institute is there for that, Lord Dana. Thank you very much. However, I think we need to take into consideration that one of their major coaches, their main coach, decided to take a gun and put it to his head and pull the trigger. I think that's kind of something that we need to take into account here.
And it very well could be. But playing devil's advocate, this is not the first time that Hall is, you know,
I agree.
Like I said, every time, you know, so I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him. But, you know, I hope whatever. I hope he is feeling better. I hope his health comes. I hope he has not damaged his health because, you know, when your kidneys shut down, I don't know if it does, you know, do parts of it. I don't know. But that can't be good. You know, your kidneys shut down. And like I said, they keep you in the hospital for an extra day because your freaking body decided to shut down because you're cutting too much weight. So, I mean, you know, from our mouth to God's ear, hopefully this is one of those things that they need to start looking into is the whole weight cutting issue.
Well,
you know,
again,
or people just start,
I do think
start
that
a fight
Dana,
within your weight class, you know, fight within your weight class.
I think that Dana White have a point. I do believe that the fighters who are in Las Vegas, as I said in previous shows, should be taking advantage of the Performance Institute. It's free. They will give you two meals a day, and they will also give you a nutrition regimen. They will also, you know, measure your hydration for you. They have the state of the art technology there. But let's move on to something real quick here because we lost that fight, but we lost the Alves versus Cummings fight because Cummings apparently passed out whilst cutting weight in his bathtub in his hotel and, you know, bonked his head, got a couple of stitches on the back of his head. Pam, yet another instance of weight cutting gone bad. I mean, we've discussed, you know, maybe the Performance Institute is the way to go, but, you know, what do you say about weight cutting here? I mean, that's two fights on one card.
Well, you know what? The sad thing to say about it is it almost seems like it's becoming the norm.
It does.
220 fights coming out. What's his name? Fighting OSP just pulled out. Khalifi just pulled out. I don't know if you saw that. So I don't know if it was due to weight cutting issues, but it almost seems that it's the norm. And because it's happening so frequently, I think people aren't taking it seriously. I think it's almost become a game of, you know, like when Khabib was fighting a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, the big kind of joke was, is he going to make weight? So like I say, it's become so common that we almost even joke about it when it's in truth. It really isn't funny. It's, you know, kind of dangerous. I mean, these guys are putting their life on the line, you know, for our entertainment. But because it's happening so frequently, we're so nonchalant about it. Oh, you know, is he going to make weight? He's going to make weight. Or there's another guy not making weight, you know. So what do you do about that?
No, I think you're right. And again, I'm going to stress this once more time because the UFC's Performance Institute, they will actually give you, if you're not going to come to the Performance Institute, they will actually give you menus and they will actually give you a professional weight cutting program to get on. So I think the fighters really need to look into that because it's free to them. That's a resource that's free to them. They don't have to get the Dolce diet. They don't have to hire someone. They will have that professional opinion given to them for free. So I think that, you know, that we're going to, as I said in previous shows, and people laughed at me, Pam, on this particular show, industry professionals. They did not think that the Performance Institute was going to be, you know, as big as I think it's going to be. And I think it's going to not only be as big as I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be bigger than that, because it's a tool that the UFC fighters need to use. It's something that the UFC is spending a lot of money on, and they should, you know, spend a lot of time getting in there and learning how to cut weight properly and be instructed mm-hmm. on how to do that properly. But Pam, these two fights falling off kind of bring up another issue, not only about weight cutting, but of course about fighter pay. And one thing that I saw especially is that people were very concerned about Vitor Belfort not getting paid getting any money. You know, I mean, it's not his fault. And I don't know about Thiago Alves. I don't know if he is getting paid his show or anything like that either. But Belfort's not getting any money for arriving in St. Louis. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's kind of messed up, because if you go back to the fight last December, when Amanda pulled out because of her sinus issues, did right. Valentina not get paid? She got show money. And how many other people have gotten show money for showing up when the other person couldn't make it? And this is on a main card, so this wasn't an early prelim or a prelim card. This is one of the main fights. Was this not the co-main? Was it the main or the co-main?
It was supposed to be the co-main, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So why aren't they paying him? It's just, I don't know. Again, it's Lord Dana. I don't know who's in charge of that, but,
yeah.
You know.
Cue the music.
I don't know. Yeah, you can't, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So you can't do it for some people and not do it for other people, because, you know, that's time and money out of his schedule. You know, he put the time into it. He made weight. He did everything he was supposed to do. So why not pay him?
Yeah, well, I think that...
But again, that's where that fighters union comes in. And
thank you very much.
Right? I mean, right?
Keep
you know, and the kind of funny thing is, you know, you've got so many perfect why that would do some good. And it's, what is it, a year now, almost 2 years that they were talking about it? And what's become of it? Nothing. It's almost like it didn't pass the first time. Okay, let's never mind. You know, if you really want to do it, fucking get out there and do it. It's not going to happen overnight. But, you know, you got to put in the footwork and, you know, put a bug in people's ear and make them see. You know, there's an example right now. Vitor not getting paid. Why are you not getting paid?
Okay, so I mean, let's break it down. I mean, I think that they, if we're to believe anything that Lord Dana said, they did offer Vitor a number of fights and he turned them down. I don't believe anything that comes out of Lord Dana's mouth anymore. So, again, but let's just say they did pull
but
Vitor
regardless,
before he
what
got
was,
on.
But regardless of who was offered to him, I mean, if your contract states this is who you're supposed to fight, I think he has every right to refuse, you know, who you're fighting, because on such a short notice, have they been tested or are they, you know, like so many things come up. But anyway.
No, I agree with you 100%. I don't believe that Vitor was in any position to have, you know, be forced to take a fight. But one thing that I have to support the company on, that he did not weigh in. They told him to not weigh in. So hopefully they are going to pay for his, you know, flight out, his hotel.
I hope so.
Of course, he's going to take he's going to take the loss on his camp. But listen, we have to realize that Vitor Belfort gets paid an exorbitant amount of money. Okay, he gets paid a lot of money, and I mean, I can understand the UFC's, you know, not wanting to pay Vitor Belfort his show money, which is probably gigantic, because he, you know, didn't want to take a fight. He, you know, they tried to find him a fight to replace that fight, and he didn't take it. So I can understand from their point of view not wanting to pay him that amount of money. And Dan from Oregon is probably going to, you know, agree with me on this one. But again, I'm all for fighter rights. Okay. If anybody is a longtime listener to this show, they know I'm a proponent for fighter rights. But unless you have something else to say on this topic, Pam, I got one more topic and then we need to get out of here, because we're almost at the hour mark. So if you got any more comments, please have them now.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I think, you know, I guess we'll just wait and see what happens. But the one thing I guess that was, you know, he was really upset about it. But I don't know if he would compare this to like the kidnapping of your sister. Did you see that comment where, I mean, that's truly how upset he was. But, you know, this was going to be, as he announced, his retirement fight. So, you know, maybe it had, you know, sentimental value. I don't know. That's Cedric in the background. Do you hear? But hopefully they get this resolved and they give him something, some kind of something. Yeah, that's Cedric.
Yeah. Hello, Cedric. I don't know, Pam, I don't know if those locker room bonuses happen anymore. We're in more in the dark now with this new ownership than we were in the dark in from the previous ownership, which I think is something that we didn't see coming. But let's move on to something that the UFC did get right here in UFC St. Louis. They did give us a very nice tribute for one of the welterweight divisions all-time great, Matt Hughes, making the walk. Of course, he's not the Matt Hughes that
we
are used to seeing. He got hit by a train in his truck and dragged quite a long ways by the train, was in a coma for a very long time. But I thought, Pam, when the UFC wants to get stuff right, they get it right. So what did you think about
I thought that was awesome. And, you know, when he came out, the music that he came out to was just totally fitting. I thought that was just really nice. And I hope that he gets, you know, he heals it completely, because he's, you know, basically, a shell of a man, you know, of his former self. But he seemed to be doing well. So, you know, best of luck to him and on his recovery.
Yeah, I agree. I think, as I was saying earlier on, this is a win for the UFC and a win for Matt Hughes. I mean, Matt Hughes should probably not have survived what had happened to him. But again,
crazy.
As they said on the broadcast, he is a strong-willed individual and, you know, got through it. And as you said, Pam, he is not the Matt Hughes that we're used to seeing. He's diminished.
No.
But, again, seems to
but
be...
But you know what? He's alive, so
in a good place,
he's alive.
Seems to be happy. And, yes, exactly. He is alive and well. And like you said, hopefully he makes a full and recovery. But, again, it was nice to see. I thought 100% kudos to the UFC. I think this was a Dana White production on this one, to be honest. I think Dana White had...
Did you notice his Robbie Lawler shirt he was wearing?
I did notice
that. He was
wearing
a I thought that was kind of funny. He was wearing a ruthless Robbie Lawler shirt.
Well, they're old school.
You know, I can't
teammates.
Go get
they're
him because he'll bite me.
That's fine.
You know, I thought that
it's
was pretty
okay.
Cool.
Let Cedric go off. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I think everybody.
Maybe
now
we'll hear him say. Maybe
who Cedric is.
Hopefully, I'm wondering if he'll say fuck. And then hopefully it was a bad word. That would be fun.
Well, if you say it a bunch of times,
then
maybe he'll say it, you know?
I know. Well, you know what he does, and of course we're going completely off topic. We have this old cat, and her name is Tut the Devil, and she's 14 years old, and she's been with us. I mean, we found her thrown in a dumpster, and we rescued her, and Tut's mean as she, oh my God, she is junkyard mean. So the funny thing is, she likes to be outside, and you have to basically force her to come inside. So I'll sit at the door, and I'll say, come on, Tut, come on, Tut. So now that's what he does. He'll sit here on his cage, and he'll say, come on, Tut, come on, Tut. Really funny. I love him to death, but he hates me. Oh my God, he bit the shit out of me yesterday. He bit me for no reason at all, but
yeah.
I love him. But
it seems like you got a lot of vicious creatures in your house.
I know. My house is crazy.
Right?
But getting back to fights, I know my house is crazy.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, so just to say one last word on it, good on the UFC for paying tribute to one of the
divisions.
Great. You know, Matt Hughes, it brought a tear to my eye. I'm going to be honest with you. Regardless of his Ultimate Fighter fiasco, I mean, he was one of the greats. He's one of the guys that amplifies, you know, or is that, you know, that kind of generation UFC. You know, Matt Hughes is at the forefront. Go ahead.
That's when I started watching way back when. I mean, It was, you know, back in the Matt Hughes's, the Tito Ortiz's, the Chuck Liddell's. I mean, those were the fighters that we grew up with, you know, and now it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of fun to see that the old guard and the new guard and now the changing of the guard. So all that, I mean, it's so exciting to see it. And, you know, bless his heart in a good way, I mean that, but for making that walk and you know, going out there and just being there for the fans. Like, kudos to him. And, you know, like I said, I hope he makes a complete and full recovery and he gets back to his own self, not in the octagon, but I hope that he regains his health and lives a long and fruitful life.
Yeah, it was great to see him on the cage side. It was great to see him sitting by Dana for the last four fights. But you wanted to comment, you mentioned it throughout the show, that there were a lot of people calling out T-City. So I'm going to throw this to you, Pam, because your news spotlight of the night.
Oh,
so
cue the music.
And,
oh, my God.
Give us your opinion.
Brian Ortega, man, he is probably right now, I would say, the hottest commodity out there. I don't mean hot because he's hot, but, I mean, he is on everybody's lip. Everybody wants to fight him. And good for him. He's going to hold up for that title fight. So, awesome for him. I think he's a great contender. I would love to see him fight. Let me see. Oh my gosh, so many people that I want to see him fight, but he's out for that title shot because I think if anybody is deserving, it is him. Yeah, there you go. See?
Yeah, I think, and like you said, I think T-City is getting up there. I mean, his record, it speaks for itself. But Pam, let's go ahead and start to get out of here. I mean, do you got any Twitter follows or?
Oh, let me see. You know what? I didn't even think about it, but you know who I do want to give a quick shout out to besides Cedric here? Is Lerone, because Showtime, Lerone Showtime? No, but Lerone, you know, Lerone is actually meeting me in Charlotte for the fight. Did I lose you?
Right. Sorry about that, everyone. Apparently, my call dropped, and Pam from North Carolina dropped off. That's fine. We'll end the show here. Stevens versus Choi, I thought it was a very entertaining main card. We're looking forward tomorrow. Today is Tuesday. Tomorrow is Wednesday. We do Smack My Picks Up. Hashtag Smack My Picks Up on Wednesday. Of course, UFC 220 coming at us live and direct from Boston, Massachusetts. You know, your boy Stipe Miocic versus the Predator, Francis Ngannou. So that's going to be exciting. So tune in tomorrow for that live and direct on Blog Talk Radio. I wanted to give a shout out to my boys over at Coheed in Cambria. There's a new podcast coming out by All Things Coheed, about Coheed and Cambria, and about all things Coheed, as I had just said. Sorry, Pam, that you dropped out. So Pam's going to say good night, everybody. And then I'm going to finish everything by saying, just like that,
motherfuckers.